VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock where I am. And this is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee. And just adding to the festivities here is?
Craig Beechler.
Ha! How about that? Adam and Craig are in Cincinnati, where they've been doing some very serious business together. Most of it on the monkey side. I wouldn't necessarily ask anybody to challenge either of their mental acuity too far this morning, because you know, it hasn't been that long since the Jimmy Buffett concert that was the real reason that they were up there. Was that last night or night before?
2 nights ago.
Oh, then you're probably fine by now. Anyway,
yeah, we're good.
Our regular listeners may remember that Craig was here in the studio with the two of us back in May of 2018. Craig is what they call an angel investor, and what that means is that younger companies who are trying to get a startup and grow quickly, many of whom fail, as you might guess, it is not widely known that most business failures happen when the new company is actually profitable. What happens is they run out of money, and when a company is in danger of running out of money, no bank and their right mind and under today's regulations will bail them out and take them to the next level. So in steps the private sector, as always, doing a better job than anybody else. And it's people like Craig who are there. And if you can sell them on the concept, they will help you get started. And I'll ask Craig to bring us up to date in the second quarter of the show on what's going on in the industry and what industries are going on, which is far more interesting to me. Oh, something else I wanted to bring up with them also. On the 22nd, which is Monday, there's a new exchange opening on the Chinese exchange. It's a biotech, small-cap, startup-type exchange, and I don't know if you guys know anything about it. I've got an idiot article in my headlines about it today, which I hope to get to, but there's a lot of this going on. Innovation is nowhere near dead around the world, and especially here in America. But first, those of you who remember where you were 50 years ago will have to be of a certain age, and you will remember the momentous occasion where the man first set foot on the moon. 50 years ago today, my sister's 70th birthday today. Unfortunately, she only lived through the first 63 of them, but she and I were in Madison, Wisconsin, playing pool in a bar, and all of a sudden, the place just went dead quiet. They had a TV up on the wall, and we watched it happen. It was really, really cool, and of course, there are still disbelievers on it, but what a day that was for our country and our people. And it came right in the middle of a really, really bad time. And incidentally, it saved Teddy Kennedy's rear end, but I won't go there today. Anyway, if you remember that, I've got a little piece that I'm going to do in the second half of the show, and I'm going to be talking to you people of that certain age who actually can remember where you were 50 years ago today. Just a little something to look forward to. And meanwhile, all the regulars, welcome back. And if you're just having a first experience with us, stick around. I think you'll enjoy it. You know, what we do here is largely labeled infotainment. We try to give you a lot of up-to-date information, what's going on, and we'd like to make it kind of fun if we can. But really, we're a lot more than that. We're a community resource where if you have any questions whatsoever on finance, investing, personal issues, inheritance, insurance, you name it, we know a lot about a lot. The thing about being a certified financial planner is that you're not necessarily the best at any one thing, but you've got to be really good at everything. Otherwise, you can't pass the test. And that's what we're here for. So if you want to just listen to what we have to say, that's up to you. But if you would like to actually participate and lend some direction to the show, just pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255, 222-TALK. And we will be here, and callers, go to the front of the line. First rule of the Van Wee Financial Hour has been for the last 4.5 years we've been doing that, and always will be. You get preference. All right, we're running a little slow because of my long introduction, but that's okay. We'll get the market wrap started, and we'll carry it on right after the break. This week started with a bang and ended with a thud, right, Adam?
Yeah, well, it wasn't too bad of a thud, really. For as much that happened this week, not a lot happened in the market. It was pretty calm all week. I think we saw one day where the Dow moved more than 100 points. And it was really a calm week of trading. But there was a lot going on. The indexes all ended up down right around 1%. The Dow was the best performing. It dropped the least, so the smallest loser, I guess. It dropped 0.7%. The NASDAQ and the S&P fell by 1.2%. And we saw some pretty positive economic news this week for the first time in a while. So I was excited about that.
Well, that's why nobody talk about it. It doesn't fit their narrative.
That, the overwhelming feeling in the market is still that we're going to see a 25 to 50 point rate cut at the end of July, which is just, I just can't justify it, but apparently the market can.
I think they've waded in water too deep to back off now.
I completely agree, and I think that Powell has all but told us it's happening. I do think it'll be a 25-point cut and not a 50.
He's got that one position to fall back on. Oh, the numbers are better than we expected. Yeah, I'll still give you your rate cut, but it's not going to be the whole 50, and I think the market will breathe a sigh of relief and call it good. That's my speculation.
I tend to agree with that. So the other interesting thing we saw this week is that the yield curve returned to normal after almost 40 trading days of being inverted.
Mm-hmm.
That's on the 3-month 10-year. And that pretty much it's not a guarantee that a recession is coming, but it's a pretty good indicator. However, as I've been saying, it's not immediate. It's going to be somewhere down the road, probably in the next 1 to 5 years, that we're going to see a recession. And, you know, honestly, I would have, without seeing the yield curve, I probably would agree with that statement. So I definitely think we're going to see some sort of pullback in the next coming years, but it's I don't know how severe it will be. That's one thing the yield curve will not tell you.
Well, Donald Trump, unlike Bill Clinton, never claimed to have repealed the business cycle.
The other thing we saw this week was earnings season really get underway. And so far, the recent trend of strong bottom-line earnings and not top-line earnings is continuing. With more than 120 companies that have now reported, the earnings beat rate is at 70%, which is very strong. But the revenue rate is at 56.5%, and that is sort of a continuation of the rather weak top-line growth that we've seen.
Do you think it's a case of optimism turning into reality? Because I can't understand why sales would be weak for so many companies. I think maybe they just got ahead of their skis a little bit on the reporting. I'm guessing.
The thing about this quarter is that going into it, everyone was flashing their forecast, so it's surprising to see the revenue rate that low.
Yeah, and it may change too. I'm not at all sure. What impressed me this week is that the financials are kicking off on a really high note. They're doing very, very well, and I'm happy to see that. That means there's a lot of activity in the marketplace and companies borrowing and so on. All right, I want to talk about Netflix when we come back. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Craig Beechler.
And the boys are in Cincinnati today, but their audio is exceptional quality today, so they could be pretty much anywhere. And we do have a trivia question today, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 904-636-7888. Speaking of the Federal Reserve, I want to know when the last rate cut from the Fed was, the year and the month. Now, that's pretty easy to look up. Some people just flat out remember it, but it's been a while since we had a rate cut. We'll see on the 31st if we get the first one in a while. It is very difficult to say. All right, Adam, I mentioned I wanted to talk a little bit about Netflix. They kind of stunk up the place this week.
Yeah, their second quarter didn't go as planned. They, for the first time since the company went to a digital platform, they lost net subscribers in the second quarter. So that, as you can imagine, did not go over well on Wall Street and dropped more than 10% on that news. Ouch.
Now, I had an initial thought that was, well, you know, they implemented a pretty sizable rate increase, and some people probably objected. But then I got thinking a little bit more. Can you think of another reason that some people might have walked away from the company?
I mean, there's a whole treasure trove of competitors coming online this year. I mean, you've got everyone from Apple to Amazon to HBO to Disney. I mean, everybody is coming up with a streaming service. So I don't think that people are going to be willing to pay for four, five, six different services. I'm thinking maybe one or two maximum. So that can't help. But I think you have something else in mind.
You know me that well, huh? Netflix recently entered into a multi-year, multi-gazillion dollar contract with a certain ex-president and his wife.
I don't think that would be a driver of subscriber. I don't think people are quitting over that. I mean, if anything, that's probably going to be a net positive for them, because despite your feelings, the ex-president remains very popular with the public.
Are you saying that I'm not a mainstreamer?
Yeah, that is what I'm saying.
I actually think you nailed it on the real reason for it. Aside from the fact the second quarter is historically weak for Netflix, but
yeah, they're
coming online.
It's not great. No. If they have bad quarters, it almost always tends to come in the second quarter, which is, I don't know the reason for that, but that, if you look at their history, that has been the case.
It has. Look at the competition, the very well-capitalized competition. You have companies like Apple and Disney out there. If anybody thought this was going to be easy for a company like Netflix that's already in the market, they get another thing coming. These people are going in it to win it.
They do have the solid first mover advantage, and the base of subscribers for them is huge, and so there is a lot to be said for that. But if they don't keep cranking out quality new content, then their business definitely will be at risk.
That is absolutely true. All right, before we get off of the market and onto what Craig's been up to lately, I want to make one comment. The economic numbers that you alluded to, including the first-time unemployment claims down to 216,000 this week. Remember last Saturday I was saying, don't take that 209 number as gospel because it was a four-day week the week before. Well, This number Thursday at 216 was a five-day week last week, and it was at 216,000. This is not a recessionary environment. And imagine now, overlay on everything that's going on, one simple little thing happening. That would be President Xi Jinping getting off his high horse and making a deal that needs desperately to be made with America, because we are setting new highs and China is at a 27-year low growth rate. He can't wait forever. And what will that do to the international and domestic markets? The sky's the limit, I think.
Isn't it crazy that a growth rate north of 6% is a 27-year low for them?
Well, it's all about where you started. The snowball turns into a snowman a lot easier than the snowman turning into a monolith. You know, start little and crank it up. All right, Mr. Beachler, what's going on in the big world of angel investing?
Well, I just want to thank you for the shout-out and remembering the 50-year anniversary, because our boy Neil Armstrong is a local product here.
I did not know that.
He's actually from Wapakoneta, about an hour north of Cincinnati, but he lived here most of his life, and when he passed away in 2012, he was here. So there's a great big mural right on Fountain Square, which is where the global headquarters is for Fifth Third Bank. designed by a Brazilian street artist named Cobra, K-O-B-R-A, and it's pretty cool. So Adam and I went by it today, and I'd love to hear more about it. But
quick question, yeah. If I may. Did you see the Washington Monument and what they did there?
Oh, that was awesome, yeah.
Wasn't it? They projected the launch right on the monument. It was so cool.
That was really cool.
Yeah. So we got a big soft spot. He was a professor at UC. I think he went to undergrad at Purdue after being a Navy pilot. And it's a really cool day. We stand on the shoulders of giants before us, you know. And I think even Jeff Bezos tweeted that out today around the anniversary. So pretty cool.
I don't think too many of us were jealous, because what are the odds of them coming home alive? Not good enough for me, but they did.
Yeah, they went around, they spun around the moon a couple times and lived to tell about it, which is pretty cool.
You know what I've thought about a lot over the years is, you've driven cars built with the same technology, built in 66, 7, 8, 9, and I wouldn't take one of them to the moon. You're going to have a lot more confidence than I do, or some kind of a death wish.
Yeah, and you know, that what's interesting, and I think a nice segue into the startup world, is to think about the entrepreneurial spirit. That is the definition of what that Apollo 11 program, the astronauts, the team around it. That's what it takes to build a successful startup, and to not be one of the 7 out of 10 that the Kauffman Foundation often cites that don't make it after 3 years. You know, they do go to zero. You mentioned that in your opening about it. So, and that as we look at, you know, evaluating deals potentially in the startup world, it's one of the most critical factor to me are, do you have a Neil Armstrong on your team, right? Is the founding team, are they reputable? Is there someone that deeply understands the numbers and the back end or the SAP systems to make the logistics work if it's a manufacturing type business? Is there a guy that's a great marketing sales guy in the face of the business? And so, you know, as we look at those deals, and I've got two deals I'm looking at right now. And since I visited you in the studio in May of 2018, I did take a seed round position just personally, not with a group or any venture folks, but in a wound healing company based out of Cincinnati. Three PhD scientists spun out of Procter & Gamble. One of them's a global expert in electrochemistry. And the wound healing market, that's the second factor I look at in making an investment, is what is the market size? What does it look like beyond the founding team? These are three studs, PhDs. The team is an A+. And then the market size is about a $17 billion global market. And so that's about 60 to 70% of my factor in whether I'm going to make an investment. And I know a lot of people listening probably kind of wonder that. And then the other deal that I've been looking at is a couple engineers like your son Adam here originally and always. And then a couple marketing folks out of Dayton, Ohio have perfected a way to print customized materials on any substrate at high speed. So think of the craft beer world, which, you know, there's roughly 7,000 craft breweries in the U.S. now. 90% of them don't brew more than 10,000 barrels a year. And so they can't really do high-end glossy beer cans. They have to wrap paper around aluminum. You can't buy a truckload of aluminum. You have to have at least 220,000 cans to buy customized aluminum. And these guys have figured out a way to print at low volume, high speed, at a reasonable cost per can. But imagine a company like headquartered here in Cincinnati, Procter & Gamble, which is, of course, how Adam and I met, because we started our careers there out of undergrad. And imagine they could customize a Pantene bottle for your daughter or your sports team or whoever it may be, like Nike does shoes. And that's where the vision of this particular manufacturing company is going to go.
Cool. Where are they located?
They're out of Dayton, Ohio, which is Dayton, better times.
Yeah, they could use some startups.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, the saying that you guys use in the investment world, we use in the startup world, if you want to sit in the shade in 30 years, you better plant some trees today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was an article in Entrepreneur this week by an author named Jeff Barrett, who kind of talked about Cincinnati being the next major national ecosystem. That's more of a coastal capital, flows into the Midwest. You being a Wisconsin guy originally and building businesses up there, you know the Midwest as a region is the sixth largest economy in the world. It's massive. Steve Case, of course, from AOL founding fame, has recognized this in The Rise of the Rest and working with J.D. Vance, the author of Hillbilly Elegy.
Yeah, I'm reading that right now. Actually, I just saw the thing that they did on TV with Vance and Case, and I thought the two of them together were fascinating. I couldn't help but think about you, of course.
Yeah, well, J.D. moved here recently, bought a house, and they ranked Cincinnati number 6 in the country for startup ecosystem. So there's a lot of capital coming here.
There were a lot of people in the entire Midwest whose talents have been grossly underutilized since the decline of the manufacturing base. Look at what's happening in Detroit, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Milwaukee. A lot of places now are starting to really come around. A lot of this leftover talent that really needed an outlook that was not 100% negative, of some creativity on top. All right, when we come back in just a couple of minutes, I want to talk about the difference between an inventor and a small startup business. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
And I'm Craig Beechler.
And as you have heard, if you've been listening, Adam and Craig are up in Cincinnati, remoting in on a very, very excellent connection. So we might as well be sitting right here. And we had a little excitement that the boys had been to the Jimmy Buffett concert in Cincinnati on Thursday. Had a little excitement here last night when the Rolling Stones came to town. 75-year-old Mick Jagger, unbelievable. And we saw some clips last night on the news. The weatherman deserves a great deal of praise. He did it all right, and apparently it was fantastic. So good for everybody, I say. I doubt seriously that we'll have another chance to get the Stones in Jacksonville somehow.
I think you're probably right about that.
Yeah, in fact, I had a lot of doubt about this time when Jagger got sick, but, you know, that old American healthcare system just patched him right back up and put him to work. Incredible, isn't it? Anyway, Craig, I think we've talked about this a little bit before, but you're not talking about people who are inventors. I have an idea, I have this little invention, and I need to figure out how to get it going. You're talking about people who actually have developed a company, an actual company that needs to grow and grow quickly to capture a decent market share. Am I correct in those assumptions?
There's a lot of overlap in this world, right? You have different stages. You talk about a seed round stage, which would be kind of the inventor entrepreneur who has an idea, wants to formulate it. And seed stage is exactly what that is. They need some capital to sprinkle into the dirt to help it grow. And that's the highest risk, you know, and also potentially the highest reward, because at that point you're investing in an idea, in people, and usually a PowerPoint. You know, that's where you're looking at the founders and the segment, the market itself, to see what the size is. And then you get into different stages. You get into seed plus round. So maybe you have some clinical data, if it's a life sciences or if it's a manufacturing company. You know, they're going to be structured somewhat differently, but some of the stuff I've done is in the life sciences. And so you might have some pig data in the C plus round. And then when you get to a full A round, and these are generally, if you look at the scope of the capital we're talking about, for a seed stage investment, someone might raise between $50,000 to $250,000 to see if their idea works. And so you might have 5 accredited investors who throw in $50,000 each on a $250,000 seed round to an inventor, but who maybe has a partner that's more business focused, and see if that idea works. And then if it does, they say, well, now we need to raise $250,000 to $1 million. And so they'll go back out to the venture market or the angel groups and try to raise that money and sell off maybe a little bit of equity. There's all kinds of different ways to structure these deals. And then when you get into the bigger rounds, like the A rounds, those tend to be over $1 million, maybe 1 to 3. You get into a B round, it might be 3 to 15. You know, I think before Uber went and IPO'd a few months ago, I think they were on an E round, and the Saudi sovereign fund had invested like $1 billion or something. Or you get into the SoftBank capitals of the world. SoftBank is a multi-billion-dollar fund that tends to take later stage businesses that already have top line revenue. They might not be profitable, but they only invest in these huge deals. And there is a ton of capital, billions of dollars kind of sitting on the sideline right now. And what we tend to focus on in Cincinnati is trying to leverage those strengths that have been built over the last century around branding and marketing. There's an accelerator here in town called the Brandery. And what an accelerator is, Steve, is it's exactly what you asked me. It's a group of people that generally have all in-house expertise that can help that inventor, if you would, who came up with a really cool idea. They apply to be part of an accelerator. Again, the one I'm talking about here in Cincinnati is the Brandery, founded by some former Procter people, Procter & Gamble. And they'll give you some seed capital. You kind of live at the accelerator for maybe 3 to 4 months. There's also one called Hillman here in town that is the first ever African-American-focused accelerator in the country, making sure you know all ships float higher in a rising tide and trying to get capital into more diverse groups than just like the traditional, like maybe coastal stuff at San Francisco or Sand Hill Road out there where all the major VC firms are. But they'll live in this accelerator, and they'll have the in-house legal expertise. They'll have coding experts to help build websites. They'll have all kinds of experts to really help nourish this idea and this inventor to become an entrepreneur. And that's how a lot of these things happen, is these accelerators have blossomed in the country in the last 15 to 20 years. And in Cincinnati itself, obviously the ecosystem I'm most familiar with, in 2007, Cincy Tech was started, and that really helped get things going here. Governor Kasich at the time, who you know has been on the news quite a bit even after his retirement, he brought a guy in from Silicon Valley named Mark Kwame, who helped start up the Ohio Third Frontier Fund. So what you see is coastal capital now is looking for better returns, and they're finding it in the Midwest. So Cincinnati, Governor Kasich, Cincy Tech, you know, they've invested about $55 million into 80 startups across Southwest Ohio. And as a result, those companies have raised an additional $850 million from 90 different venture capital funds. And that's all in that Entrepreneur article, the Entrepreneur Magazine by Jeff Barrett, that came out this week. So these are the jobs of tomorrow, right? These are potentially the Procter & Gamble's who employ 90,000 people globally that started in 1837 on the banks of the Ohio River. It at one time was a soap and detergent company, and that was it. You know, with a couple guys who married, you know, they're English and Irish, and they married sisters, and their father-in-law encouraged them to start a business making candles and soap on the banks of the Ohio River.
Well, that was some good advice, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We did a trivia question last week on how Sears got started. It was the Sears Watch Company. There had been a shipment of watches that got turned down by the end user, apparently, and Mr. Sears had some retail background, and he snarfed them up and started to sell them, and one thing led to another, and there you go. Got a little bit bigger also. I've noticed over the years that P&G is not a bad resume item for an awful lot of people who went an awful lot of places doing an awful lot of things. It's in its own way, I guess you'd call it a business hatchery or something like that. Some people stay there and get rich. Some people leave and get richer.
Yeah, that is right. They are a solid breeding ground for, you know, management experience and then going on to take on leadership roles in different companies. Like Jeffrey Immelt, before he retired from GE, he, you know, came out of Meg Whitman, former CEO, or is she still the CEO of eBay? She's a Procter person.
I'm not sure, to tell you the truth.
I don't know either.
They're sprinkled throughout a lot of leadership positions in corporate America across the globe, really.
Interesting. Yeah. I love it.
But again, it's no different. It's hard to envision 165 years ago, 170 years ago, but a father-in-law gave a seed stage investment to two brother-in-laws, you know, to start their
Sandal and
soap company.
And sometimes it hits.
Yeah. And sometimes, as we know, as I mentioned the Kauffman Foundation earlier, sometimes they don't, and that's the risk you take. But it's also so much fun if you're investing in a Neil Armstrong-type person who is just an absolute beast and wants to see their company succeed and will do anything, you know, sleep on sofas, you know, not make money for several years, all to see their idea come to fruition. There's a guy in town who actually recently left Procter in December, who I'm also negotiating a deal with at some point. He's incredibly passionate, and he's surrounding himself with food people, he's invented with a SME, a subject matter expert, SME, the first ever delicious keto bread. I don't know if you follow the keto trends or the paleo diet.
Yeah, personally, but I know of them.
It's a multi-billion dollar market. And this guy, along with this local baker, he's been in the business forever. He understands bread better. He's basically a breadologist, PhD in bread. I prefer the other bread that's green and thin. But he raised his seed round in no time. He's working with people out of Kellogg School of Management and Northwestern. And I think he's going to build the first ever major national keto bread company.
Cool. I hope it works for him. Let me ask you a quick question before the break, and then we can talk a little afterwards. What do you think of cryptocurrency?
Cryptocurrency, I think it's extremely speculative and high risk, and I think you have as good a chance of making money by walking into your local casino and putting it all on black.
I got a little news on that front for right after the break. All right, lines are open, 904-222-TALK. Give us a call, whether it's finance or startup business or anything else these days. Trivia question still out there. What was the month and year of the last Fed decrease, which we're hoping to duplicate again this month? Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Vanley Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanley Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanley.
And I'm Adam Vanley. And I'm Craig Beechler.
And I was just asking Craig on the other side I got to back up. This segment's sponsored by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. You don't want to be doing this yourself out in that heat. Call Troy at 662-9794. Trivia question still open. I was inquiring as to Craig's position regarding cryptocurrencies, and he's about as supportive as I am. So I'm going to put this little piece of information in the bucket called I Told You So. Singapore and the U.S. aren't exactly approaching the cryptocurrencies the same way. Singapore has a value-added tax, a VAT. They have exempted the cryptocurrency from their value-added tax. I don't really know what to say about that. Yeah, I do. I know one thing. You got a value-added tax? What a bunch of idiots. But that's beside the point. Other jurisdictions, including Australia, Germany, and Portugal, have also exempted the cryptocurrencies. If the Singapore Parliament does go through with this, it'll become law in January. Neighboring Malaysia is one better by deciding crypto doesn't qualify for capital gains tax. But that's because digital currencies are not considered assets or legal tender. Okay. But what did I tell you about cryptocurrencies a long time ago? I said that there's a lot of people that are going to be using these things to avoid paying taxes. And guess what? They are. Only 53% of Americans have plans to report their cryptocurrency gains or losses, according to one survey. Who do you think that would irritate? Could it be our friends at the Internal Revenue Service? Yes, could be. IRS is proposing a host of measures to identify and prosecute crypto tax evasion. They range from grilling family members and friends, searching through social media posts and block explorer data, using electronic surveillance to determine whether a taxpayer transacts in or maintains a balance of Bitcoin, and issuing subpoenas to access bank, PayPal, and other account data. What did I tell you? If you are thinking that was a good idea to try to avoid the taxes by using cryptocurrency, you deserve what you get. That is my humble opinion. Feel free to disagree at any time. Meanwhile,
sounds like the real thing with crypto is if you're going to own it, just don't talk about it.
Yeah, and even then it might be too late.
Yeah, exactly.
If you can't explain it to a 12-year-old in 5 minutes, what are you doing with it? How many years have I been saying that? All right, people of a certain age, gather around. I didn't name any ages because it was so easy to tell who you are. Today being the 50th anniversary of the man first walk on the moon, If you remember exactly what you were doing, then you are of a certain age. But things have been changing a lot for people who are getting a little older, and I can't really say that for the most part it's been for the better insofar as the job market is concerned. Now, age discrimination protection has been the law of the land for a long time. It was actually passed, the Age Discrimination and Employment Act was passed in 1967, because in 1964, when the Civil Rights Act was passed, age was not included as one of the protective classes. So they went back and revisited and passed the 1967 Act, all about age. Well, what went wrong? You know, age protection sounds like a wonderful thing, doesn't it? But in its infinite wisdom, Congress applied age-based discrimination standards to everyone over age, you ready? 40. That was not a misstatement. The act applied to people over 40. How many actual senior citizens are protected by a law that covers everyone 40 years old or over? For an employer to skirt this, imagine this. A little bit creative. You want to get rid of that 64-year-old? Fine, do it. And all you got to do is replace the 64-year-old with a 41-year-old, and you went from protected class to protected class. No discrimination. Brilliant. Under the 1967 Act, any employer with 20 or more employees engaged in interstate commerce, and I will tell you, you got to look hard to find an employer with 20 employees that is not engaged in the Congress definition of interstate commerce, they were prohibited from discriminating against a person 40 or over due to age. This applied to hiring, firing, pay scales, job assignments, and fringe benefits. But seriously, can you imagine anybody winning a suit like that? I can think of two reasons why Congress might have made this protection go down to age 40. The first would be that business lobbyists understood what was about to go down and got to them and made it easier for themselves by covering everybody from 40 up, which pretty much covers nobody when you think about it. The second reason might be even a little more simplistic. That would be that Congress was just completely and totally inept. Personally, I kind of like choice C, all of the above. So the toothless...
Probably accurate.
Yeah, I think so. The toothless nature of the act was evident for decades. And I think most everybody knows someone who was a victim of what really appears to be age discrimination. In our daily lives, in our office lives, we've seen several. Some of them, they're just so bad that you can't believe it, and yet no good comes of it. How about a 64-year-old who gets laid off because in a few weeks the pension would go from unvested to vested? How about getting laid off a day before the Family Leave Act was going to take effect because you have a sick child and you want to take some family leave? We have seen it, people. And these folks did not win. On the positive side, nowadays, people are sometimes getting a good exit package to get out. Now, that started back in the 80s, and my parents were caught up in it, thankfully. Back in 1987, they both worked for utilities and had a long, long service, each of them in their own companies. And they were each 57 years old. So the companies approached them at the same time in 1987, within weeks of each other, and offered them buyout packages that would fund their pension fully, equalize Social Security up to when they filed, health insurance. They had the whole nine yards. So they packed up and sold the house in Wisconsin and moved to Florida. My father called it a no-brainer, and he was right. But then the Great Recession came, and a lot of people became unemployed for reasons that they actually had absolutely nothing to do with. And as the slow recovery started in 2009, finding a new job was a struggle, and especially so for people 55 and over. There was a big supply of younger, less expensive workers trying to get a foot in the door. You look at a 60-year-old versus a 35-year-old or a 30-year-old, and you can see the 60-year-old being very expensive, higher salaries and more time off and so on and so forth. So as it got better and better, especially after 2016, you saw the whole labor and employment picture change, The downsized labor pool, because so many people actually have been rehired, is about 6 million people today willing to work, and there are about 7 million jobs available for them. So things have changed very, very nicely economically. But there's more going on. There's a different situation now that's a quality situation rather than a quantitative situation. You have seen now over the years the businesses' complaints. There have been many, many surveys over many, many years. I got a quick call from on the line, which I have to take, so please interrupt. Good morning, Kenny.
Good morning, guys. I'll make it quick. The name of the gentleman with you again, what's his name and company?
Craig Beechler. He works on his own. Craig, do you have a company name?
Yeah, actually, Fountain Square Capital. We don't have any web presence right now, but Fountain Square Capital.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, Ken, if you send an email to our office, info@VanWeeFinancial, we'll get his contact information to you.
All right, real quick, this conversation I heard, I've been listening to talk radio almost 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the best conversations you could ever have on talk radio in America.
I want to thank you. Well, I appreciate your kind words very much. Keep listening, and shoot us an email, and we'll get it to you. That was one.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah.
Steve, one thing I'll add: if you're listening, you want to do a startup, get the book Venture Deals by Brad Feld. Venture Deals.
Okay.
It's a great book. Brad is a co-founder of TechStars, one of the biggest funds and accelerators in the country out of Boulder, Colorado. Venture Deals. Grab that book.
Cool. I'm going to tell you two things real quick. December of 2008 was the last time we had a rate cut. And this week in the office, our 55-year-old friend got a bonus to stay on because the people they're trying to hire aren't worth anything. Good luck for us older people. See you next week. This is the VanWee Financial Hour.